one of the things the pandemic has done is remind us that maybe experiences are more valuable than things.
There's a revolution taking place right now.
Talent and intelligence are equally distributed throughout the world, but opportunity is not.
The talent economy, the idea that at the center of work is the talent, is the individual.
The way we work has changed forever, and highly skilled talent is demanding flexibility around the way they work and the way they live. This podcast brings together thought leaders, staffing experts, and top talent to talk about the evolving nature of work and how companies can navigate these changes to remain competitive, drive innovation, and ensure success. Welcome to the Talent Economy Podcast.
I'm your host, Michelle Labby, Chief People Officer at TopTel. Since its establishment in 1996, Booking.com has revolutionized global travel. Offering hotel and flight services across more than 220 countries, 1,200 cities, and available in 40 languages, Booking.com aims to simplify global exploration. As a prominent figure in the travel industry, the company generates a staggering $18 billion in annual revenue, facilitating countless customers in discovering accommodations that fit their needs. Booking.com has successfully navigated the intricate intersection of the tech and travel sectors while fostering an award-winning workplace culture. Their commitment to their employees and leadership excellence was recognized in 2023 when they won a Comparably Award for Best Global Culture and Best Leadership Teams. Today's guest is Paolo Pisano, CPO of Booking.com and EVP and CHRO of Booking Holdings. Since joining Booking.com in early 2020, Paolo has led the company's efforts in people, organization, and diversity and inclusion. Prior to Booking.com, he held significant roles at Gallup, Pearson, and Barclays, and has gained a wealth of experience in change management, organizational development, and executive coaching. He holds his MBA in strategy and administration from INSED, the European Institute of Business Administration. Welcome, Paolo. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So Booking.com is one of the most popular travel websites for people looking to see the world. I have been on there recently because I'm planning a very long vacation in Italy in May. So I would love to hear from you. What is your favorite recent destination?
Wow. Well, first, I'm glad you are a customer. I was one also before joining the company. Recent destination, actually, I'm at a point, there's still places I want to discover, but I'm also at a point in my life where I like repeating places that I really liked. So that's also part of it. Recently, I was back in Madrid, which is not a faraway trip, but it's such an amazing city. As someone from Rio in Brazil who grew with a sea nearby, I'm not sure it would be the ideal place for me to live in, because you don't have kind of a big body of water. But as a city full of energy, it's one of my favorite spots for what the Spaniards call La Marcha, as you go bar hopping and just kind of enjoying the energy around the city. So that was a recent really good one.
I love that. Yes, I have the travel bug and I like to go new places every time I go somewhere, try new locations. Awesome.
Super.
So I know that you've worked in HR and talent for over 20 years across multiple industries, including publishing and finance, two that I've actually also been in. What drew you to the travel industry, specifically Booking.com?
What drew me towards Booking.com is that this is a company that's very much at the intersection of travel and technology, right? It's a two-sided marketplace that really tries to help build more, remove the friction, let's put it that way, from travel, right? All of us who travel a lot, be it for business or for pleasure, we know that travel is not always easy. There's always kind of issues that come along the way, be it as you're flying or booking a car or renting an accommodation. And Booking is very much at the intersection of that, right? Trying to make it easier for everyone to experience the world, to travel around, to connect with loved ones. So when I came in touch with the opportunity, I thought it was fantastic, number one, because of the nature of what the company does. But there was also an element of where the company is in its history, right? Booking grew to become one of the most important players in this space out there. It's a very competitive market, but it's done some really interesting and creative things around the world. And at the same time is in a transition space where we're moving from being a company that historically has focused mostly on one product or service, right, and mostly in the accommodation space, to becoming much broader in its offerings and much more ambitious, not just about offering more stuff, no, more products, but about trying to integrate what we offer to create something that's quite unique for people. So there's this notion of transformation happening in the organization that really drew me to it.
I love when, as an HR professional, if you can then work for a company or an industry that you're very passionate about. So definitely a big perk there. So TopTel is and always has been a fully remote company since we started 13 years ago with people all across the globe. And I know that you coordinate HR for over 20,000 employees in more than 200 offices worldwide. I think you have Amsterdam headquarters and major hubs in Tel Aviv, Singapore, New York, Shanghai. How do you coordinate your workforce across so many locations?
It's interesting, right? When we were moving into that space together with every other company around the world throughout the pandemic, we noticed this contrast, right? One thing is if you're a company that was born remote, so everything was built around that way of working, versus if you're a company that was born in a different way and then you have to adjust. For Booking.com, we were not remote before the pandemic. We were, I would argue, pretty flexible, but at the same time, pretty office-centric in terms of the culture of the organization. The more recent times where we've been kind of moving into this hybrid space, in a way, we've leveraged partly what was already true for the company over the years. We've been global for quite a while, right? So Booking.com being global is not recent. So even though people locally worked with colleagues around an office, we were already pretty integrated globally. So we had to learn to work with one another across different locations, across different time zones. So people were quite used to connecting over Zoom, over the phone, over, you know, different forms of video. And I think that hasn't changed fundamentally. I think that we've just learned to do it much more often and to do it not just across continents and time zones, but to do it sometimes kind of within the same space. So it's demanded our awareness when we design meetings or design experiences, so that we design them in a way that they're inclusive and effective for people who are both in person and who are remote. And I would say we've had to learn, like everybody else, how to do that a bit better. But we've got a highly engaged and adaptable workforce, I'd say. So it hasn't been a horribly difficult learning curve for us. Actually, I think people adjusted pretty effectively to this environment.
And you joined in 2020, right? Right as the pandemic hit. So was that stressful? And then how did you navigate that sudden switch?
Yeah, I mean, it was the timing couldn't have been more aligned. I started at Booking.com in March 2020, the end of my second week of work. I was already working with our kind of crisis management. And one of the first big decisions we had to make was the decision to close 200 offices and send everyone to work from home. So it was definitely a shift, right? I've joined originally to work on this transformation and to continue to expand the organization. And very quickly, we saw our revenues drop drastically. Well, all of us embarked into this very unknown space, right? We didn't know how bad this was going to be. We didn't know how long it was going to last. So I think it was stressful for everyone to do that. But I think in hindsight, we made some good moves early on. First, we were quite decisive in our early decision to send everyone to work remotely. I think we had amazing internal teamwork to enable that because we were not fully enabled to have everyone in all functions working from home. So there was a lot of creativity and a lot of collaboration to enable that, make that happen for us. And as much as this was a deep crisis environment, I think making some good decisions and realizing you're doing the right thing gave us confidence and gave our employees confidence that we were thinking about this carefully in the right way with their best interests at heart as well. Another thing that helped us throughout that period of crisis was very quickly prioritizing, right? Eliminating all the things that are not essential and trying to get everyone focused on what's truly important for the organization, for customers or partners, employees, And by doing that, we removed a lot of distraction and we were able to get everyone centered around one narrative, which was easier for everyone to understand and to connect with. I think about it a little bit like, you know, if your body is in stress, typically, you know, the blood flows into your vital organs. And it's a bit like that, right? We pull kind of all of our energy into kind of what was vital for us. That made a big difference. And then we increased the frequency of communication. We started exploring kind of more ways to communicate to make sure we're reaching all of our people. And we were very transparent and very vulnerable with the communication, right? When we didn't know something, we were very open about saying, we don't know, we're looking for that information. We didn't dodge questions or anything like that. We're just there for the people. It's very interesting because we saw the reflection of that on the engagement surveys we run internally. Early in the pandemic, actually, you see that the trust in leadership spiked up significantly because people started seeing leaders connecting with everyone. So back to your question, I mean, was it stressful? I think it was for all of us. But I think by doing less things and focusing more and being closer to our people, we ended up creating a very nice network of collective support that helped all of us, including myself and the leaders of the organization, right? Because you realize also you're not alone on it and you don't have to carry all the weight on your shoulders, but you're working in service often with the people around you.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to say you're fully remote, and then it's another to be in the travel industry when then no one's also traveling.
Oh, right. Exactly.
So yeah. So you're still now today in a hybrid model.
We're in a hybrid model where we have strong guidance around the notion that we are not a remote company, and that we see enormous value in the office spaces that we have, but we are not prescriptive saying we mandate that you are at the office these specific days or 5 days a week. We are more flexible than that.
So what tools are you using? We're a Zoom and Slack company, so you really use email for us at all. So what tools do you use that help facilitate this company culture and keeping everybody connected?
We use tools like you do. I mean, I think historically we've been probably more email centric. Historically, we already used video for a long time on the basis of the geographical dispersion of the firm. So those have been around. We use Slack. We use Workplace and Work Chat. We use different things because also we have a collection of brands in the group. We try to be mindful that different parts of the organization engage more effectively through certain platforms and certain tools. The positive, of course, like all things, you have a positive on that, which is you can reach and connect quite effectively. The flip side of it is you end up with lots of different platforms, and maybe that's not optimal, right? Rather than having one or two. So that's an open question we have now, which is, okay, we have all these different platforms, we're using lots of different tools. Do we want to converge, right, over time and use less of those and integrate it more effectively? But the other way to think about it is to think about it not just from a tools as in a technological platform standpoint, but would you say a mindset is a tool, right? So we really try to engage with our people and reinforce and create a mindset of deep collaboration and empathy and care for each other. So if you're in a hybrid environment, for example, it means you want to create experiences or meeting spaces that are automatically inclusive, where I'm automatically thinking about, does this work for everyone that's engaged here? Or what adjustments do we need to make? Now, that no matter which technology or which tool I'm using, if I don't have people thinking about that automatically, no tool is going to take care 100% of that for us, right? Equally, when we were in conversations around people coming back to the office without, as I say, a mandate, but spending more time at the office, the mindset there to help develop awareness around was that we're not here for ourselves only, right? We're here for each other, right? You join an organization because you want to build a special place, an amazing place to work and to collaborate for more people. So when I'm deciding if I'm going to be at the office, I'm not just thinking about, is it the best thing for my job? I'm also thinking, if I'm at the office, am I adding value to other people? You know, because people can bump into me, because we can connect more easily, we can have impromptu conversations. So So there's an angle to your question around which tools, which I don't think it's just the tools.
Right.
It's how to work around the mindsets that are going to help enable and make the most of whatever tools you have out there.
So with all that said, you're in a unique situation because, you know, as you said, you sit between the tech and travel industry. So How are you attracting and retaining this tech talent since you have this global presence and a big pool to choose from?
It's interesting, right? When we were in the midst of the pandemic, it was quite hard. The tech travel companies were not doing particularly well as people were not traveling, but you had a number of tech companies that were, in a way, benefiting from the pandemic circumstances, right? I'm not saying they were profiting for something bad, but, you know, people were spending more time on Netflix and those kinds of platforms, or maybe shopping more from home at Amazon. So you saw enormous growth in those organizations. Looking back, though, and I think now the tides have changed, right? You see many of those organizations have made significant cuts in headcount, whereas we have not. We've grown quite consciously and quite deliberately and where we wanted to grow. And we're still growing and we're still hiring. But throughout the pandemic, the decisions we made around how we engage with our people, that built, I think, a lot of trust internally, which then in turn translated also into references and connections, right? People talk to each other. We do recruit around the world, as you pointed out. We look for talent wherever it is, so to speak. And we want to have the best and the most diverse kind of pool of people working with us so that we can be kind of representative of all the ideas and perspectives and the richness, right, of diversity you have out there. So that's important for us. And because we have that goodwill, and I think we've built that brand without really trying to, in a way, it helps us. It helps us attract people from very different backgrounds and very different parts from around the world. The other part of it is, as I've mentioned, I think the same reason I joined is you look at our company and you look at the prospect for growth you have, not just for us, but in the sector in general, right? One of the things the pandemic has done for many, if not most of us, is remind us that maybe experiences are more valuable than things, you know? And I think the experience economy is going to grow and develop faster. You already see some of those stats, right, around the things that the younger generations value. And it tends to be more often than not experience-led rather than materially-led. So we look ahead of us and we think there's so many amazing opportunities. And that's a draw as well, right, for talent that wants to come and that want to be helping us develop some of these amazing opportunities.
Yeah. Being a fully distributed workforce from day one, I love that about TopTel. We want the best person. I don't care where they live or what time zone. We just want the person that does the best that they can. And I agree. My son is 22. And for years, he's just not one of those kids who wants a bunch of things. I'm like, let's just do experiences. Let's travel. Yes. Let's go to different locations. So I get that.
That is amazing. That opens up. I mean, we talked often here about the travel as a force for good in the sense that it generates jobs and all those good things. But for the individual that travels, right, it broadens your perspective,
absolutely,
right? It shows you a way of looking at the world, which is not your own necessarily. When you do that with people you love or you like also, it's an amazing opportunity to connect and to experience it together. There's so many great things about it. And that's what you take, right, with you when you think about, you know, the lifetime we have here on Earth. It's certainly more about the experiences. People rarely regret that they didn't have something. They regret they haven't done something or experienced something more so than I didn't buy that car or didn't buy that house or whatever it is. So
speaking of that, Booking.com's mission is to make it easier for everyone to experience the world, which we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So what unique travel benefits do you offer to your employees? You mentioned when we started that the pictures behind you are from actual employee trips. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of walking the talk. The way the offices are set up and decorated are very much in tune with the notion and the energy of traveling. We've had, you know, even from the previous offices, different rooms with different names and the walls like you have now. This is paintings on the wall, but sometimes you had the whole wall was painted with a picture that someone took in their vacation. You have which vacation it was and which day, and it was registered because it's super important for us. The employees at Booking.com, they get an annual benefit. I think it's a little bit under $1,500 a year to spend on travel and accommodations kind of within our platform. So that's a nice way to support people going out there and experiencing the world. We have a generous holiday policy as well. So people have the time off to enjoy that. During the pandemic, we've started, you know, we've decided to maintain it. This like working from abroad benefit. People can work up to 20 days a year from different locations. So we're always exploring angles and alternatives where people can explore the world, be it on holiday or kind of in some type of kind of flex working.
Yeah, that's great. So everyone's talking about AI, as we know, and Booking.com has been using AI tools like automated customer service chats for quite some time. But, you know, I know AI technology has made huge progress in terms of generative AI, and it's all anyone's talking about today everywhere. So how do you see AI playing a role in how Booking.com employees get their work done?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? How, like any new thing that comes up, it's become this fever that you don't have anything happening without people talking about generative AI. And then you've seen not the interest dwindle a little bit, but there's a little bit less, you know, hype around it. Like people are realizing, well, this can't really do everything. It can do certain things and we still need a bit of development, et cetera. But the nice thing is that this short-term hype invited everyone to look more deeply into, okay, so if this can become as good as we think it might, how could it change some of the things that we do? For us, indeed, at Booking, we've been using different forms of AI for quite a while now. I think there are new potential capabilities with large language models and generative AI that haven't been fully explored yet. For us, you know, kind of employee experience is a big candidate for us internally in terms of AI, because there's a lot you can automate and really kind of change the way people interface with information and learn how to navigate policies and basically knowledge management and admin tasks within the organization. So we're starting to look into that space. I've been talking to a number of my colleagues and counterparts in other companies also, so we can share, you know, experiments and what kinds of things we're doing. And there's a lot of movement in that space, as you know. So we're looking a little bit on that space first and foremost. I think there's going to be also very good opportunities from a learning and development standpoint. There's a big challenge, I think, in today's world, which is you look around you and everyone is so busy, right? There's just so much going on. The level of complexity we experience with our jobs, the number of emails and just general data processing that we have to do, plus the number of sources of information you have out there also, because if you add to your work, you can't easily go into YouTube and TikTok or whatnot and consume information. So you put all those things together and it makes it really hard for you to find time to deliver useful, kind of relevant, timely, cost-effective, accessible learning for people. I think AI can play a really good role in that space. We're starting to explore what could that look like in the future. So I'd say, you know, employee experience in terms of navigating the workplace plus learning are kind of a couple of the biggest candidates, in my opinion.
Yep, absolutely. And so you mentioned learning. So, you know, training is something that we focus on huge here, and like, especially now, training, learning, development. And really, it's key for a great talent pipeline. You know, people want to be trained. They want to know what the next job is and what they can do. I've heard about Booking.com's Compass program. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We have historically, Booking.com tended to hire more kind of experienced professionals for the organization. That's been in many ways extremely successful, but it's curious, right, that compared to other organizations, we had not invested as much in the very early in career space. And I prefer calling these programs early in career than graduates, because now we're more and more open around where we're recruiting from and what alternatives are there to join the organization. But more recently, in the last couple of years, we started opening up more room for connecting with very early in career professionals that can come into the organization, move across different parts of the business or the function, learn the business more horizontally, and then become talent pipeline for us for the longer term. And one of the benefits of that, I think, is not just that we bring early in career professionals that may have fresher views around things, but is that very early on they get an opportunity to connect with various parts of the organization and therefore help us build like that connective tissue around the business, right? Because historically, we were a bit more siloed, right? You tend to grow kind of in one space and connect more deeply with people in that space. As we become more ambitious around what we want to offer to our customers, be it, you know, travelers or partners, we need to become more interdependent, right? We need to work much more effectively across different parts of the business. We need more multidisciplinary teams. We're building that, you know, as we go. But the more we can infuse the organization with early in career professionals that are already learning to do that from the beginning of their careers, the faster you're going to move on that. So we're excited about that space.
Yeah, I love that too. We're focusing a lot on intern programs and, you know, folks who come out and, you know, might be in one department, but are interested in another department. And, you know, based on work fluctuations, you know, we might need somebody in customer service to pivot over to sales. I've had some recruiters, when we were slowed down on recruiting, move over to sales and training them on new skills to try to, you know, keep them in the company and embrace new challenges and understand a different side of.
Absolutely. I love that. We're doing that as well further into the career, right? So not just the people who join, but one of the things we're doing for more experienced professionals is exactly that, is seeing where we have opportunities for people to do kind of internal internships into different parts of the organization or to join projects, right? Increasingly, also the way you get things done is through working groups and projects that are pulling people from different areas for a specific goal. We see those as enormous opportunities for development too.
So I want to ask a question about Bookings Holdings, your parent company. So I know that in addition to serving as chief people officer of Booking.com, you've also recently taken the reins as CHRO of its parent company, Booking Holdings, right? So how does, you mentioned earlier, but how does coordinating HR for like a family of brands differ from a single company?
Yes, it's some of it is not that different, I would say. The vast majority of our operating companies are very much in the same space. So we're not that different from a business model standpoint. That helps. Also, the companies have been within the same group, although they've operated pretty independently, they've been in the same group for a while, which means they're not complete aliens to each other, but they are kind of connected in some spaces, and that helps. When I look across the portfolio, though, we want to provide our brands or operating companies with the right level of autonomy, right, and agility. They've achieved pretty amazing things in their own right in the markets, so you don't want to slow that down. But what you want to do is start finding the opportunities to leverage and to scale more effectively, right? So not to reinvent the wheel, to share resources, to maybe work with external partners or suppliers in a more unified way. If you're developing managers particularly well in one of our companies, why not, you know, build a program on that that can be leveraged across all of the group? And then each company can build something that's more specific to them, but you start developing a philosophy and an approach to management development that's more the same. So on the one hand, my role across the group becomes more of a role of building that connection, that community of practice between the various brands in the group, and starting to develop plans around that. So there's one angle of it, which is really trying to make sure that the result is more the sum of the parts, right? Is that we're really leveraging the group and the talent we have more effectively. The other part of it ends up being in service of the leadership of each of the brands, more kind of from a coaching standpoint or a connections standpoint, providing them with a different perspective, linking them with resources that maybe they didn't think were available or they would not know how to find them, So it is different in those senses, right? Where it's more about building the connections, it's more about the coaching angle.
And you also want them to feel like they're part, the company culture is important, whether they have their own identity, but the overarching culture is still important to maintain.
Absolutely right. And that's an interesting challenge I think a lot of organizations live with, right? Which is, and what does it mean to be part of Booking.com or part of Priceline? But what does it mean also to be part of Booking Holdings? That's something I think we still have very nice opportunities ahead of us.
Right. So as we start to wrap up, two final questions for you. So I'm an avid reader and I love to ask my guests if there are books that have positively impacted your leadership or ones that you recommend to your teams. Did anything come to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an avid reader as well. I mean, you're making me think there's so many interesting books out there. Have you come across 4,000 Weeks?
No.
Okay. So that's
I'm adding this down to my list.
It's not a business book. But it's a book, I love the, I think the original title was 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals. And I liked it because it's not a time management book as much as it is a reflection on what does it mean to spend or invest your time intentionally. 4,000 weeks is the average amount of time we have in a regular lifetime in a developed kind of Western country. So it makes you reflect on how are you using your time and how are you engaging with that? I think it's a very interesting book because of the time at which we're living, right? There's just so much happening. And it's a good reminder around intent, around focus, around being really deliberate around how you use the one resource that we have that is not something you can replace, right? Each week that goes by, you're never going to get it back. So that's a book I like and I recommend.
I just wrote it down. Well, I'd love to wrap with one final question. What has been your proudest moment as a leader?
Ooh, proudest moment as a leader. Yeah, I'm not sure there's a proudest moment, but I'll tell you one that comes to mind, maybe because of the anchoring to the beginning of our conversation. When I see how the teams here at Booking came together during the pandemic and just the incredible level of collaboration, availability, and just mutual support in general. It was amazing to see that. It was amazing to see the leaders around me really serving each other and serving the business. I think to live through that and to make a small contribution towards that made me incredibly, I think, I'm not sure if the right word is proud, but it made me grateful to be able to be a part of this.
That's awesome. Well, Paolo Pisano, Chief People Officer at Booking.com, thanks so much for your time and insights today. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Talent Economy. I'm your host, Michelle Labby. You can find much more information about The Talent Economy on staffing.com and toptel.com/insights. Hubs for bold, comprehensive content featuring business thought leaders and authoritative research focused on the future of work.